Before we get started with this episode, I wanted to let you know that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. In honor of this, I'm making my signature course, Resiliency Sprint, 50% off just for podcast listeners. You also get lifetime access to CBT Family Toolbox, over 100 activities, resources, and ideas to bring cognitive behavioral tools to your family. Head to childanxietysupport.com/resiliencysprint to learn all about this foundational course. And when you sign up, use code PODCAST to get 50% off both the coached and uncoached versions. This offer is only good till May 31st, so make sure you sign up now. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Child Anxiety Fact Podcast. My name is Dawn Friedman, and I'm the owner of Child Anxiety Support, a membership for parents of anxious kids. I have my master's in clinical counseling and additional postgraduate training in child anxiety disorders, including exposure and response prevention and the Supportive Parenting for Anxious Childhood Emotions Program, or SPACE program, which was designed by Dr. Ellie Lebowitz of the Yale Child Study Center. I'm also certified in infant toddler mental health. FAQ stands for Frequently Asked Questions, and each week I'll be answering your questions about childhood and teen anxiety. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody. This week's question is social anxiety disorder caused by trauma and bullying? Well, first let's talk about what a social anxiety disorder is and how it's diagnosed. Now, social anxiety is not just being introverted and it's not just being shy. Social anxiety is when a child struggles to function in social situations. An introvert may prefer their own company, and a child who is shy is a child who might be slow to warm up in social situations, but in both cases, they're able to get there. In social anxiety, the child's anxiety prevents them from participation. Now, there are two aspects to social anxiety. The first is what you might call stage fright, where the child's anxiety is centered around a fear of performance. This isn't just being afraid of being on stage or public speaking. This is a fear of raising their hand in school or ordering at a restaurant or answering the phone or being in any event where they might be seen. The focus here is on the performative aspect of being observed. Most of us don't want to be the first person on the dance floor, right? So you can imagine how that feels. The stage fright part of social anxiety is that feeling of being first on the dance floor in any aspect of social performance. So these kids might have trouble getting up in class to sharpen a pencil. They may have bathroom accidents because they can't ask the teacher to be excused. They might struggle in sports or gym class because they have to practice in front of their classmates or team members, you know, like when your coach lines you up and you take turns running up to kick the soccer ball into the goal. The second aspect of social anxiety is about the actual interaction. This can be present with the performative aspect, or it may show up on its own. In this case, there's intense worry about disappointing other people or making people mad or having people judge them. These kids might have trouble making eye contact, and this is separate from children who are on the autism spectrum. Social anxiety is often co-diagnosed with spectrum disorders, but lack of eye contact is not always an indicator of social anxiety. Anyway, we all have those middle of the night worries when we are afraid that we said something stupid in a social interaction. Most of us can shrug it off. We know people are forgiving, and also most people aren't paying that close of attention to us. But when social anxiety is present, those ruminations, those middle of the night, oh my gosh, I can't believe I said that, they can feel overwhelming. Kids with social anxiety fear negative judgment. Of course, we all prefer not to have other people judge us negatively, but kids with social anxiety are so afraid of it that it stops them cold. Their avoidance is around this perceived possible negative judgment. To avoid it, they may limit their socializing or withdraw from social interactions, or they may always go along to get along, meaning they're part of a group, but they never speak up and they're sort of on the fringes. In severe cases of social anxiety, the child might also meet criteria for a diagnosis of selective mutism, where the child's anxiety is so great that they're unable to speak to people outside of a select few, usually family members. The child is able to speak, they have no physical limitations, but their fear stops them from speaking. Our children who are socially anxious may ask us to reassure them all the time that no one is mad, no one is upset with them. They may need to process an event over and over. They may apologize for perceived slights or insults, taking responsibility for things that aren't an issue. As an aside, I see so much of this in middle schoolers. It's a socially anxious age. Conversations between two kids may halt entirely because they are both so caught up in apologizing to each other. Of course, middle schoolers can also be incredibly thoughtless and cruel to each other. It's a complicated age, and the same child who's ultra sensitive in one social context may be clueless in another. There are estimates that up to 30% of adolescents experience some measure of social anxiety, and frankly, I think it's underdiagnosed because I meet a lot of adults who didn't realize that they have social anxiety. They report that they're just very introverted, but when we drill down, it looks like they've been socially anxious their whole lives. Which brings us to the original question. Is social anxiety disorder caused by trauma and bullying? And the answer is, yeah, sometimes it is. It may be, but it isn't always. A child may have a negative interaction with another child. A child may be bullied or harassed by other children. And of course, naturally, they would become more socially anxious. But sometimes other children develop social anxiety without a clear precursor. Interestingly, some children with social anxiety who do not have bullying in their background may still perceive some of their social interactions more negatively than they actually were. This is not because they're liars. It's because some children are more sensitive to negative reaction, real or perceived. Remember, we've talked about this in previous podcasts. It's called an information processing bias. What this means is that a child may tell you that someone doesn't like them or even have examples of someone being mean to them. This is more about their perception than what really happened. Another child might casually say, "Wow, your shoes are really bright blue." And the child who's socially anxious may hear that as critical or even mean when the other child was simply making an observation. All right, so what do you do for a child with social anxiety? Remember that anxiety gets worse with avoidance. So we want to help those children have more social interaction. This doesn't mean just sending them off to school and saying, "Go make some friends." That's not going to work for every kid. For some, yeah, sure. Children who are more motivated, who have already built some emotional muscle in overcoming anxiety, who have some measure of social support, maybe a good friend in school who's going to hold their hand through it, they may be able to push through it, but lots of kids need help with skill building. You can reach out to the school counselor and ask them about social opportunities. Some will have groups, a lunch bunch or a more formal group that the child could attend. Some may have ideas about getting that child more involved with extracurriculars that interest them and would feel safe. And some school counselors might have an idea of a peer that they could connect them to help them open the way to more social interaction. You can also look for social opportunities that are a better fit for your particular kid. Girl Scouts, a church group, 4-H. If your child has a special interest, you could see about connecting them to peers that way. If you've got a child or teen who does a lot of online activities, head to the local comic book store and see if you can get your gamer nerd to open themselves to other nerddoms like D&D or Magic the Gathering. Our little neighborhood library used to host gamer meetups to get the kids offline and talking to each other, but still honoring that gaming was an important interest to them. You can try that too. The reason I bring up computer games is that kids who are socially anxious are more likely to have what the researchers call problematic internet usage. That is to say, avoiding real-world social interactions by increased use of online social interactions. I do want to pause here and say that I believe that online relationships are real and important and they matter, but they are not a substitute for real-world relationships. It's great to have good social keyboarding skills, But we also need to be able to interact with people offline. It doesn't need to be one or the other, and we can encourage real-world friendships without denigrating online friendships. This is a trap I see some parents falling into. It's important when we're talking about supporting our kids, since many will feel rightfully defensive if we turn it into an either-or discussion instead of a both-and. Your online friends are important, but you have to make real-world connection too. If you can't find the right social environment, you could consider creating one. Social media makes it easier to network with other local parents, and maybe you can find or create the social group that would feel welcoming to your child. It doesn't have to be a large group. It can just be a couple of kids who are willing to hang out and talk about the thing that matters to your child. You can also talk to counseling practices and occupational therapy practices. They both sometimes host social skills groups. Sometimes these are specific to a diagnosis. For example, they're common for autistic kids. But some are open to any child who is needing opportunity and practice in learning how to be with other kids. The leader of these kinds of structured groups know and expect that the children may be awkward and may struggle with each other. Talk to the facilitators and see if your child is a good fit for their group and that the group is a good fit for your child. Some of them will organize around a particular theme. There was a local one here that used to do cooking together. They combined kids who maybe had trouble with some sensory aversions to food and gave them a low-key, easy way to cook, eat together, have fun, make friends. Getting intervention sooner rather than later is important. Sometimes we figure middle school is just awkward, they'll grow out of it. But social anxiety leads to depression if it continues through the teen years. And it makes sense because those peer relationships are so important in the teen and young adult years. And so kids who aren't able to fulfill that need can really struggle. Social anxiety tends to create dependence as children increasingly rely on their parents' support and intervention. There is research showing that children who have separation anxiety when younger, that is, struggle to separate from caregivers for longer than is developmentally expected, are more likely to develop social anxiety. Parents naturally start assuming their kids can't function on their own, which leads to more parental control, which leads to greater social anxiety. It's basically an echo chamber. As in all things, parents need to recognize when what they're doing is hurting more than helping, which is always a tricky thing with anxiety, and learn to step back. If you need help with that, I encourage you to check out my program. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. If you have a question you would like me to answer on the show, please go to childanxietysupport.com/FAQ. And if you'd like to learn more about the Child Anxiety Support membership, please go to childanxietysupport.com. The membership offers courses, live events, and community to help you design a personalized program to free your family from the trap of child anxiety. I hope you'll consider subscribing to the podcast and sharing it with any friends or family who you think might find it helpful. You can get more of my child anxiety content over at Instagram, where I'm Dawn Friedman, MSED, or on Facebook at the Child Anxiety Support page. Thanks again, and have a great week.